So Windows 7 web hosting is what we're going to go through now. So we will make a start in 2 seconds. So web hosting with Windows 2012 R2 and System Center 2012 R2 and the Windows Azure pack. So web hosting opportunities are really focused with the Azure pack around high density shared web hosting or dedicated web hosting. Okay, so we're really talking about automated processes and scale. So being able to take customers to scale out and grow the business. Okay, so if customers want to be able to add extra web servers, be able to do it without your admins going and building servers manually. So web hosting opportunities with Windows Server 2012 R2 and Windows Azure Pack. We're talking about next generation of web hosting platforms. Just hold on for one sec, Craig. We're hearing you over the mic, mate. Thanks. So we've got next generation web hosting platform. So we can optimize the platform for shared or dedicated hosting. We also have highly automated, scalable services that mean that we can scale to hundreds of thousands of sites. Okay? It's a different structure to what you would traditionally do with web hosting on IIS. Okay? We're talking about high enterprise class scalable web services. We're also talking about multi-tenant environments with isolations at the server core. We can also do Hyper-V network virtualization with those websites and web servers. We also have software-defined networking to improve the QoS that we deliver to those web servers. We also have policy-based automation that we can take advantage of with the clusterware updating and dynamic optimization to make sure those web servers are evenly distributed. We have the solution optimized to deliver both shared or dedicated services. So we can have your shared web hosting where you have multi-tenant, highly automated, lots of web host sites, so hundreds of thousands of sites, commodity price offers. So we're talking about offers where you're offering $5 websites, $100 websites, $10 websites, whatever it is. So that commodity type style where customers just want a basic website or a website that's lower end, we can deliver that in the shared environment. We can also deliver higher volume, higher requirement websites in that environment as well, but those customers you're probably going to upgrade or upsell to the dedicated web hosting environment, which is still driven through the same infrastructure. All we're doing is taking them from the shared servers and giving them dedicated servers. Okay? We still use the same management processes, same solution, same interface. It's just purely we're giving them dedicated VMs. So the dedicated web hosting is really targeted for mission-critical applications, like if there's a really critical e-commerce web application or someone's financial application that they don't want other people having access to or potentially getting access to. So web hosting opportunities, we're giving you a simple management interface, okay? We're giving you an opportunity and a platform where developers in the community can easily develop the web apps for that platform. Okay? A lot of ISVs and web development companies are doing WordPress. They're doing Drupal. They're doing PHP sites. They're doing .NET sites. They're doing a whole range of different types of sites. We can offer all of those website applications on IIS. All of those applications will run on the platform. We're also talking about upgrading existing customers to higher margin options by upgrading them to dedicated reserved instances where they get a server to themselves or guaranteed resources to use. We're also talking about standardizing your platform so that those Linux-only web applications that used to exist, you can migrate them to the Windows platform. We can successfully do that. We can also successfully migrate customers from SQL to MySQL, or you can stick with MySQL and do the deployment through the web WAP portal. hosting service providers, with developing web hosting businesses. So if you are new to web hosting and it's something you want to try and drive, we're giving you the tools out of the box so you can offer single or multi-tenancy solutions. You can provide customers a great experience out of the box using the portal. So some of the facts about enterprise and high-level web hosting is we are able to do CPU throttling. So we can make sure that one customer's web application isn't impacting all your customers' web apps. Okay? There's nothing worse than having one customer's website take up all the resources and not be able to throttle them back. So we're able to deliver that platform in IIS. We also have application initialization. There's nothing worse than waiting for a website to load for the very first time after a server reboot or something. Okay? We now have the application initialization capability to have your websites pre-warmed up so when customers hit it, they're not waiting for that. If they're the first one to hit it, they're not waiting for it to start going through the processes and loading up the code and caching everything. We also have dynamic FTP and IP restrictions where we've got policies to block unwanted access. We have shared configuration where we can have a share interface where all your customers' websites get stored and we can have multiple websites driving that platform. We also have embracing the web standards. So we can do .NET, we can do PHP, we can do Node.js. We're also giving you a common development platform and access to it. We have the Windows Azure pack to manage it. We can also do centralized SSL stores. You no longer have to mount SSL certificates on every web server. You can put them in a central store and the web servers will pull the certificates they need as they need them. We also have non-uniform memory architecture capabilities, so the NUMA technology will get used by IIS if your hardware has it. We also have server name indication, which means that we no longer have to give every customer that wants a HTTPS website their own IP address. We can now share web IPs across HTTPS. So we did this in our own environment. We migrated from having two platforms into a single platform. We moved all of our Linux hosting to our web platform. There's a couple of web apps that we couldn't move because of older application development, which restricted it. But 99% of our platform is now Windows web-based hosting. Okay? We moved all of the WordPress sites to Windows. We moved all of our PHP sites to Windows. I now save money because my admins only manage one platform. Okay? I have the automation tools to automate everything. I don't have to have Windows Azure pack for my VMs or a third-party control panel, and then have a different control panel for my web hosting. I now have one portal for everything. So we were able to reduce our hardware costs. I now were able to consolidate the number of VMs I needed to run, so therefore I was able to save costs on the hardware. I was able to reduce the number of physical boxes I needed to service that environment. Reduce my complexity for management, and reduced my support costs drastically. Okay? We've automated the processes. I have one interface. All my customers know what the interface looks like, no matter whether it's websites, VMs, databases, it's one interface. So when we look at web hosting with IIS 8 on its own, and shared web hosting with IIS 8, we're looking at some of the new features and functions that we're able to deliver on this platform. So the server name indicator is a really big one. So being able to use central support SSL certificates is a massive change for us as well. When you have SSL certificates, one of the biggest issues and pain points were you had to keep track of expiry dates and you had to load the SSL certificates on every single web server you wanted to put that site on. You also had to then either get customers to renew their certificates for you, upload them to you, do all that sort of process manually. So with a shared infrastructure, we're now able to have multiple different sites, pull them together, and have one interface to manage it. So server name indicator means that we have that easier certificate management. We're able to reduce our hosting costs because we also don't have to buy as many external IPs or use as many external IPs to host HTTPS websites. So a lot of service providers, if a customer came to them and it was Mr. Joe Blow who owns a little website, but he wanted his website to be secure and wanted the SSL certificate, you had to give him a dedicated IP address, which could cost you, depending on the country you're in, anywhere from $5 to $10 for an IP. Okay, and that became a big issue because you would go through, if you had 100 of those customers, that's 100 IPs that just pretty much were being underutilized, is a nice way to put it. So we're now able to increase our site density as well as the single shared IP address. So we're now able to have those multiple websites using the one public IP without having to waste a lot of IPs on that external network. The web hosting certificate store can contain thousands of SSL certificates. It's really a file share. You load up your PFX file, your CER file, into that share, and the web servers, you point to that share, and they will just go and grab the certificate that closely matches what that website is. Okay, so whether it's a wildcard cert or whether it's an actual full UPN certificate, it's up to you. So in 2012, we introduced SSL certificate support for centralization, and in R2, we still have it there as well, and it's improved a little bit. So we have every new addition to the server farm used to require the copying of the certificates. So there was a lot of challenges around acquiring the certificates, managing the certificates, reminding certificates of renewal, and not being able to track in an easy way which ones are due to expire this month. In 2012 R2, because we're storing them in that central location, we can actually sort by expiry date. So in the interface, you could actually bring up the list of certificates in the store, sort by expiry date, and you can then contact the customers and say, you know what, your certificate's due for renewal this month, please start organising it, or do you want us to organise it for you? You don't have to wait for that call from the customer to say, you know what, our website don't work at the moment, and then you find out it's the certificate. Okay, so you've either had to wait for that, or an admin sits there every once a week, goes through every single website certificate you've got on all your different web servers. So we're centralizing and saving some time and effort there. So dedicated web hosting, some of the challenges for running high density websites has been the whole configuration. Having to reproduce the same web server over and over and over again, the same configurations, copying web content from one server to the other, and trying to also manage denial of service attacks and other attacks against those servers. We also have application initialization. So when a user requests an application or a web app or a website, we're not sitting there waiting for it to load. So we have this solution to help manage that end user experience. The returns static content as a splash page until the application has finished initializing in the back end. So if it is taking a while, it will give the customer a splash page instead of just an empty white screen. The system also proactively performs the initialization tasks for an application when it starts to help improve those performances of that first user that hits that site, especially if it's been a few hours in between. So the user logs in, accesses the website, the ASP.NET application loads drivers, models, libraries, and helpers in the background. The Internet Information Services .8.5 is requested. So we're just trying to speed up that process so the customer doesn't see a nice white blank page for 5 minutes while the website loads or whatever it is. Repeatability with configuration editor. So being able to use Helm Visual Editor to make advanced configuration settings easier to edit. So if you've got high density, high volume websites, being able to make those custom changes in a much easier process. You can also repeat the process in a much more simple process. The IIS configuration editor can also generate managed code like C#, JavaScript, command line app command, or Windows PowerShell scripts. So when we look at securing IIS, when we wanted to use IIS 7, it required manual discovering of known IP addresses that were trying to attack you, and then you had to manually block them. And you could only set a 403. So if you did block an IP, the person that came from that IP would see a 403 error. In IIS 8, we have dynamic IP restriction capability. So when a customer or someone tries to attempt to continually connect to your website, you can actually block that IP dynamically. So you can configure it to say, you know what, if we have 6 attempts from the same IP address in a short period of time, we want you to block that IP for a period of time. It's proxy aware, okay? So it can detect if it's a proxy trying to access the website or if it's someone trying to attack the website. You can configure the response that you give. So if you do block an IP, you can change the information they get. You can set a HTTP 401, a 403, a 404, or you can just abort the request. With the dynamic IP restrictions, all we need to do to enable it is simply add the role and feature to the web server. So you would go into roles and features, you would come down to under web servers and tick the IP domain restrictions and make sure it's installed. After we've done that, you go in and configure it in IIS Manager, you set the access, whether you want to enable domain name restrictions, enable proxy mode, and what type of deny do you want. So when you are detecting it, do you want to show an unauthorized, a forbidden, a not found, or do you want to just abort the request? We can also restrict FTP logon attempts. So we can also protect your FTP environment from having multiple attempts. So if a customer does, or someone mistypes their password too many times, you want them to get through. So what you would do is you would set the maximum number of failed login attempts to probably something like 3 or 4 or 5, because that means that if a customer is typing that password in that many times incorrectly, they probably deserve to be locked out for a little while. Or they will then contact your help desk to get it reset. We can also specify a time period in seconds. So if we have 4 failed login attempts in a 30-second window, we know that's probably an automated attack. Okay? For a user to type in the password incorrectly 4 times or 5 times in 30 seconds is normally not a realistic thing. Okay? For a user to sit there and actually type their password in 4 or 5 times and waiting for the responses for it to fail each time normally takes a bit more than 30 seconds. Okay? So when we do configure it, we can configure it to deny the IP address, or you can get it to write it to the logs, and then you go back through the logs manually and then start blocking IPs. Okay? So you can either have it actually forcefully disconnect people, or you can have it just log the information, and then you as an admin would have to make the decision later. But it could also be too late by then because you could have been broken into or attacked or denial of service. So Windows Server, we're talking about a pretty open web platform now, okay? IIS is, of course, going to be best for hosting .NET applications, okay? So there's been some huge innovations with Dev 11 and ASP.NET MVC4. There's been some huge development and a lot of on-ramp programs around the Web Matrix solution. So we can fast-track getting people on board into IIS, especially the development and ISV environments. It works with PHP. There is no massive, messy configuration changes you need to make in IIS to get PHP to work. We have first-class support for now for FastCGI and PHP. Community PHP is available in the web platform installer. So you can actually get the web platform installer, which comes with iOS, to automatically install PHP. You can also get it to automatically install Drupal, Joomla, WordPress, and other applications that are available in the gallery. We also have an iOS node project now started that enables us to use GitHub. So for developers and ISVs or customers that want to do content management and upload multiple versions of their website and then be able to pick which version they want live in production, we enable that feature in the new iOS platform. So if a developer uploads a new version of the website and they make it live and it doesn't work, they can very easily go to a drop-down box, pick to roll back a version, and they're back to the previous version of the website. There's no having to re-upload using FTP and all that sort of thing. Yep.
Could that be done on a shared hosting environment?
Yes, that can be done on shared hosting, dedicated hosting, it doesn't matter. So this whole new platform we're talking about with high available websites with the Windows Azure pack and everything else, all that GitHub functionality is built in. You just need to enable it. We're also embracing the Windows web, the web standards. So we have WebSocket support in Windows 2012. We have great async operations and client-driven web application integration, as well as excellent choices for rich HTML5 applications. And just on that, the Windows Azure pack is a HTML5 website. Doesn't use Silverlight or anything else. It's a HTML5 web app. So in CPU throttling, in iOS 7, there was some basic CPU throttling. Wasn't the best. It was a little bit hit and miss sometimes about when it would actually kick in. Sometimes if you set it, it took a little while before it actually actively done anything. In iOS 8, the CPU throttling is pretty responsive. If you set a throttle, it pretty much kicks in straight away. So we're able to limit the CPU usage per tenant, so per web application pool, etc. So the throttling of CPU utilization is there. We're also able to enable that CPU throttling only when the servers are under load. So you don't really want to restrict their websites if the CPUs aren't busy. You really want it to kick in when the CPUs are busy and websites are competing for CPU time. That's when you want those quotas to really kick in. We can also terminate an iOS worker process if it's using too many resources. So with CPU, in earlier scenarios, you could have tenant A trying to access a website and their web application is using two of the CPUs available. We could then have tenant N accessing their website and they're pulling all the CPU resources they can out of CPU 2 and CPU 3. And then when tenant B tried to connect, well, their website ran like an absolute dog because there was no CPU left. Okay? So in 2012, we're able to make sure that we can set maximum CPU process quotas so that no customer's web app should miss out. So with the Windows Azure pack, we're enabling that next generation of web hosting capability. So we can do shared and dedicated. So we can give customers the ability to scale their websites on demand. So customers can scale up in seconds. They literally go to the web app portal, pick a slider, move the slider to say, I want my website on 3 servers, 4 servers, 5 servers, and hit the go button, and their website is now deployed across those 4 or 5 web servers. We can react to the website load increase immediately. So if a customer does have their website running on 1 or 2 servers, and they try and connect to it and it takes a long time to load, they can instantly go to the system and increase the web servers. We can also reserve a greater amount of server capacity to help improve performance. And they can do it through a single dashboard. They don't have to go to multiple interfaces in your environment to do it. We've also got service provider benefits around subscription-based billing and tracking capabilities. So when customers build their websites and they increase or decrease, we can capture that billing information. We also have reduced blockers so that if a customer wants to increase the amount of web servers that are publishing their website, they don't have to wait for one of your engineers to get a support ticket and then copy the web application to multiple servers or do any installation tasks, and that could take them a day or so. So we've automated that process for you. Therefore, we're going to get better customer satisfaction. If the customer has control of how many web servers are publishing their website, it's in their hands whether or not it's enough. So the question is there any specific requirements or configurations of the web applications to scale them out?
Yeah.
The answer is no, because the web application, as long as we can package that web application, we can deploy it to multiple servers. Because what you're going to find is, unless there is specific things that needs to install on a specific web server, okay? So unless there's some prerequisite applications that need to run in the back end, okay? If it's just purely a web application, we can stream that because the content is in a central location. So unless they need to make a significant change to the web server itself, there's no issue with the load balancing and scaling out.
There's no issue with like running Ethernet sites in Brock versus
state server? No, none of that's going to be an issue. It's more as it along the lines of if you don't have ASP.NET 3 installed on the web servers and it needs it, okay, then you're going to have a bit of an issue, because if you don't deploy ASP.NET as part of your default template, then you'll have an issue because you'll need to go and manually install it, okay? But if you've configured the web servers with all the prereqs that you need for your websites, then no, it's not an issue.
Is that still considered like a server farm? So anything you might have to do to support a server farm?
So the question is, if there's certain things that I need to do to support an application in a web server farm, do I still need to do them? Depending on what that requirement was, you may still have to do that, but majority of applications don't need it. Okay, I'm not going to say there's not going to be an application that does, because we're in an environment when we talk about web hosting where ISVs and developers do a lot of strange things. Okay, so those that follow good practices are pretty easy to work with. Those that have done some weird and wonderful things, sometimes we run into some issues. But again, it's going to be a testing process, but you'd find that out when you first deploy it on the first server. You'll find out in a real hurry whether or not. So we're really changing the methodology that we use for web hosting. Traditionally, you would have a web application server and you would have your application database and you'd have RIS in the front that goes and provisions that. So what we're really doing is, instead of having that manual scale-out process, we're having a distributed model where we can have multiple web servers provisioning that web application. And we're storing all that information in a single location. So instead of just having an RIS server, in the new RIS model, we have application content servers, we have application database servers, we have application worker servers, we have publishing servers. There's a whole structure to the new environment that is going to be very different to the way you may be used to doing web hosting. Okay? Some of you may just have RIS servers that you've load balanced, or RIS servers that have just got a shared content storage, but you don't have the process of web worker roles, web publishing roles, web... There's a whole range of things that we'll go through shortly. So handling a HTTP request, how does it get handled in the new environment? So the end user makes their HTTPS request. It gets passed to the front-end application request router. Okay? That router passes the information to the front-end application request router, which we would have load balanced. Okay? We're talking about high available web hosting, so everything's going to be at least two servers. We then pass to our cluster topology and runtime states. The local routing logic, so the server or virtual machine that we're going to be pushing this website to, or websites, or web servers. The web application and configuration is part of that routing logic. The worker process then processes that web application request. It can then get passed to a temporary app file storage server or to persistent storage where the web application databases sit, as well as the web application file directories. So it is a very different process to what you're used to today. And then we also have our resource usage data to be able to pass back about who's visited the websites, what the website was performing like, and all that sort of thing. So websites with Windows Azure Pack, as I said, making it easy to density scale, also making it very easy to publish with open publishing standards, integrated an open solution so your developers can develop on it very easily. We also have lower customer onboarding costs, so it costs you less to onboard new customers. We also have the upsell capability to upsell customers from shared web servers to dedicated web servers or reserved web servers. Flexibility with support for PHP, ASP.NET, Node.js, metering and throttling capabilities, as well as a fully integrated web application gallery, so that they can, when they decide to deploy a website, pick what application they want. Do they want a WordPress website? Do they want a Drupal website? Do they want an Orchid website? What sort of website do they want? So the Windows Azure Pack websites, we have our shared and our reserved. So you would have a bigger pool of farm servers for shared, and then you would have a couple of servers on standby in reserve mode in case a customer wants to move to a dedicated server. So down the bottom there, we could change from 2 instances to 3 instances to 4 instances and dictate whether that's a dedicated or shared environment. So on the right there, you'll see popular app gallery inbox. So out of the box, when you go to Windows Azure Pack for websites, you will see that there is a gallery and you can pick from there a whole range of different applications. Okay, that gallery is growing every day as more ISVs and developers add their applications. We can also do out-of-the-box dynamic and shared reserve capability, but we can also let customers upload their content from different sources. So they can use Dropbox, CodePlex, GitHub, Bitbucket, Visual Studio. There's a whole range of ways they can interact with IIS. So there's some additional services. When we look at the high available web hosting, it's not something you can just turn on in probably 5 minutes, okay? It's not like just running up a traditional IIS server. There is a bit of a learning curve that you need to go through to learn how to deploy a highly scalable and highly available solution. Because as I said, you are probably looking at traditionally 14 servers to start with. Okay? If you want a highly available, redundant solution, you're looking at least 14 web servers. Okay? We're talking VMs, doesn't have to be physicals, but you're looking at a significant number as a footprint, okay? You can still do your traditional web hosting where you've just got a web server. So if you don't have a high volume of websites, then it may not be the solution for you. You may want to stick to your more traditional solution. But again, it comes down to what features do you want to sell your customers? Do you want that high flexible solution that they can upsell, upscale, have redundancy, offer them 4 and 5, 9 type SLAs on their website? So just going to go back to the Azure portal and we'll do a quick demonstration on the websites because we never really went through that in our earlier demo. Sorry guys, I just loaded the wrong website. Just give me one sec. that not the tenant portal? So I'll just show you the very quickly. I'm going to show you the back end of the website's environment. So we're going to show you the admin portal first, and then while I'm waiting for the tenant site to load up, we'll go to the tenant site in a minute. So website clouds, okay, I can come in here. I can see my website cloud, which is Contoso. Let me zoom in on that so you can see. So I can see my Contoso cloud. And I expand that out. When I click on it, okay, I can see statistical information on how my cloud and web workers and all the web servers are performing. Okay, so here I can see the CPU and memory utilization of those servers. I can see I have 13 websites active. So let me zoom in there for you. So down here I can see at a quick glance, I have 2 web worker servers. I have 1 front-end server. I have a publishing server, and I currently have 13 websites published on those servers. And up here I have my dashboard, which shows me the CPU and RAM, as well as my roles, websites, configure. So let's just jump back out, and we'll go to roles. So at the back end here, I can see the different servers that make up my environment. Okay, I have a controller server. I have my file server, I have my front-end server, I have a management server, a publishing server, and then I have 2 web workers, one shared and one reserved. So if I have a customer that wants to do a dedicated, move their website to a dedicated server, we can do that easily by having that reserved server sitting there waiting. Okay? So as you can see, that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 servers. And that's just having one server do each role. So if I want that high availability, that's 14 servers, okay, because we double up all the server roles.
So, sorry, just on that,
so we have websites. So here I can see all the websites that are running at the moment. Whoop. So here I have all the websites listed, who owns the websites, the status, as well as the subscription IDs. Down the right-hand side. So over here are all my subscription IDs and the number of workers that website is on. Okay, I only have 1 web worker in my environment, but if I wanted to, that could be showing 2 or 3 or 4 web servers that that website's being provisioned by. So over here we also have our configuration page, where we configure, well, you know what? What is the default if a customer doesn't have their own URL or fully qualified domain name and they want to just have a website that's going to be at my domain name as a hoster? That's where I put the default domain name. So if they don't enter a domain name, that's what it'll be. Website default certificates, we point it to the central share where we're loading all our SSL certificates. Publishing settings, the web deploy DNS server, the FTP DNS address that you want to use, as well as the publishing certificates. We also have a block list where I can start creating a block list if I want to block IPs or block services. And then we have the credentials. So in here, I can see all the different credentials I've set up for the services. So let's switch back to the user interface. And hopefully I've got this password right. Nope. Try one more time. So let me just... Just let me, one sec, guys. I'm just going to reset the password. Give me one sec. So for those that want to know, in the Azure portal, we can come in and we can actually reset a user's password. So this is what I planned all along. So you can see here, I can always click on it and see it as well, but it gives me two green things to say I've actually set it to the same password on both boxes. And let's go back to the user account. And we're in. So as we come in, I'm going to click on my websites because I don't need to see all my VMs and everything else. So here I've got my list of websites. I can click over here on the right-hand side and it'll take me straight to one of the websites. Okay? So if I want to, I could come down and we can go to the WordPress website. I can click on it and it tells me that my website was successfully created. I haven't done anything to that website yet, but it was just automatically deployed. So let's create a new one. So I can hit new. Let's go website. I can go from gallery. And here, as you can see, I can scroll through the gallery and I can pick any type of website using any of those gallery types. Okay? So I could hit WordPress. I could hit a empty PHP website. I could pretty much pick any of them. So we'll just pretend we're going to do a WordPress. I'm not going to hit go because it'll just take a little while in my dev environment, but we'll go through the process. So in here, I would type in the URL I want to use. So we'll just go Leon. I can also specify to use an existing SQL database, or I can create a new MySQL database. Okay, so I can go create new, and it will go and create a new database during the process. Okay, if I've already got a database that I want to use because I've uploaded it or something, I can pick that from the list. You go through the steps. I'll put in a database name that I want to use because I'm creating a new one. The edition, we've only got one MySQL server because this is the MySQL version of WordPress, not the Windows Microsoft SQL version. Put in the name, database credentials, password. And then I would hit the go button and that's going to provision my website. Okay, I don't want to wait for that to finish just yet because it's going to take a little while to create the database and then the website. So we're just going to skip out of that step for now. But that would go provision my website and then I'd connect and start provision and use that website. Okay, so it's a pretty straightforward process. But let's click on one of these existing websites. Okay, in here, when I've clicked on my website, I can see that I've got tools that I can download. I can publish my app. I can download my profile to use in my development tools, or I can integrate source code and go and get it to use any of the products that we discussed earlier. So whether I want to use BitHub or any of the other products to pull down versions of my website. So I can go to my dashboard, and in here I can see any performance statistics on my website. It's my dev environment. No one's been hitting the website lately. It's not on the internet. So normally you would see data in and out, CPU times, HTTP errors, or any requests. And we can specify it over a 24-hour period, 6 hours, 7-day period, whatever it is that you want to see that over. Down here, I can see the burst time for my CPU or my CPU time, data out, my storage requirement. So as you can see, I'm using 2% of my 1 gig. And down here, I can see how much memory is in use. At the moment, my website's not being used. So 0 meg, but if my website was busy, it would show me the statistics on how much memory it's using at the moment. Down the bottom, I can see that there's a linked resource to my SQL database, okay? And then down the right-hand side here, we've got some other options where I can download my publishing profile, set up deployment credentials, set up deployment from source control. So if we wanted to have those multiple versions of my website that I can pick which one I want to go into production with, I can click there. I can view my virtual IP addresses, and I also have my site URL, but also my FTP server that I need to connect to access my web, to upload websites, my deployment FTP diagnostic logs, and my subscription ID. We can also come over to monitor, and we get a bit more information displayed a little bit differently if I want to see how my website's performing. I can also configure my website. So I can pick the .NET framework version, I can do PHP versions, whether it's a 32 or 64-bit platform, whether I want to use WebSockets, upload any certificates and change my domain names if I wanted to, do any SSL binding. So if I upload a certificate, then I can pick which certificate I want to use for this website. I can do application logging, my site diagnostic logging, and any application settings and connection strings, etc., that I need to put in. I can also do default documents. So down here, I have my default documents. So I can change or add default documents. Okay, so if a customer's got a weird website that doesn't use one of the normal default pages, you can load up whatever page you need to put in there, as well as any handler mappings. I can also stop and restart my website from down the bottom here, or I can browse to it. Now, when I go to the scale tab, okay, I've got different website modes. I've got my intro, which is my shared environment. I have my basic shared, which will give me a little bit more resources and capability. And then I've got reserved. So if I tick that reserved, what it means is it's going to move my website from my shared web servers to a dedicated web server. Okay, and that's all I need to do is tick that box and hit go, and it moves my website. Instance count. Down here, I can scale up. So I can go to as many different servers as I want, okay, as long as they're provisioned, all right? So you need to keep on top of how many web servers you need to manage your customers. We can automate the deployment of additional web servers. So if you do need to have the system automatically scale out, so if someone does slide that past what you have in production, we can actually get the system to go and build new servers. So once you've made your changes, you could also save them or discard them. And then we have linked resources, which is my database. Okay, I could have multiple databases or whatever it is. Okay, so that's a very brief, quick introduction into web hosting through WAP with a high availability, high density web hosting solution. Okay, but as I said, it's a serious deployment. It's not just a one or two web servers and you're up and running like you may be traditionally used to. Okay, we're talking high scale, high availability with lots of flexible solutions. Okay, has anyone got any questions on IIS? Yep.
Is there any way to get access to the raw 33SBC logs?
So from this interface, no. But you can.
Okay.
If you go to the servers themselves, you'll be able to pull the logs, but you won't be able to get them from within the Windows Azure portal interface. The only logs you'll be able to see is what was said in the logging.
Okay, so you can also set up something in their FTP log file?
Yeah, so you could pipe their or copy their log files to FTP and then they can access them through there.
Is each server created its own set of logs depending on the number of web workers there are, or is it centralized?
No, you can centralize the location. So when you configure your web servers, you would have to point them to a central location for logging. Yes. So in the shared environment, you're scaling it. And if you're in reserved, you can also scale. Yeah.
How does it handle moving IP addresses when you go from different instances to do a load balancer? If your website's going to change IP addresses.
So the question is, how does it deal with the load balancers and changing the IP that you may be going to? So if it goes from one web server to another web server, how do we track that internally? So what you would traditionally do is your load balancer goes to the ARR servers. okay? And then the ARR servers do the routing. Okay, so your load balancers sit in front of the ARR servers. The ARR servers are in front of the web workers and the publishing servers and stuff like that. Okay? Is that what I'm saying? It's a pretty big change to possibly the way you're doing it now. No, so the DNS isn't part of this. You can add DNS to it, though.
It's easy to
extend. So if you wanted them to create a DNS record and an IP and all that sort of stuff, we can do that. No other questions? Cool. So that's the IIS presentation completed.